Our next presenter is Miriam Lara. She is a writer, researcher, and is working on the Worker's Guide to Health and Safety at Hesperian. She's also a Bay Area colleague and an excellent dancer. She is in what was once the gene capital of the world in her native Mexico. Miriam joined a labor and human rights collective and supported factory workers fighting for fair and safe working conditions while she worked for a broad-based coalition to build the first women's crisis center in the region. Her background is in grassroots organizing, and gender led her to Hesperian and to the project she is currently part of, which is this guide. She's passionate about Hesperian's mission of making technical information understandable, accessible, and actionable for all, and is especially interested in developing a resource for workers that demystifies OSH information, validates workers' knowledge and experience in the shop floor, and motivates them and others in the workplace to take action individually and collectively to improve their work and community lives. Okay. Thank you, Miriam.
I apologize that I have a cough, so hopefully it won't interrupt as much. But my name is Miriam Lara, and I have no relationships to disclose. So so I work for this organization called Hesperian Health Guides here in Berkeley, and we develop popular education materials and primary health, so we're famous for this book, Where There's No Doctor. We have other titles as well that have a similar principle, that believe that people can be empowered to take the lead on their health, specifically in places where there might not be any other resources. And a few years back, several of our partners sort of came up with the idea of, could we make this resource where there is no occupational health professional, really thinking about workers in countries where there are no resources, where there isn't a culture of safety. And so we began working on this book, A Worker's Guide to Health and Safety, which Valeria mentioned. And we decided to focus on factory workers, mainly because that was sort of a focus of the people who asked us for this resource. And we specifically decided to focus on three industries, garment, shoes, and electronics. And so we had some idea based on a lot of research done by activists all over the world on sort of what the hazards were in garment, as Valeria mentioned, dust and ergonomics and a lot of the social hazards that we all know, right? And we also had some knowledge about what the hazards were in shoes, specifically glues and cleaners, as well as this, you know, similar ergonomic and social hazards. But when we were looking at electronics, we realized, you know, with the sheer number of electronics, chemicals used in electronics, that there was this huge amount of information that we didn't know, that nobody we knew at that moment knew. And so what we decided to do was kind of look at the beginning. And so we first looked at Silicon Valley. Obviously, the industry, the high-tech industry, was there many, many years before that. But in the 80s was when it finally became apparent, this chemical exposure on workers and on communities became apparent, and workers were getting sick, communities were getting poisoned, there were cancer clusters. And so activists in this area, many of whom are here, Ted Smith and Leslie and Amanda, people from the Silicon Valley Toxics Coalition and Santa Clara Kosh, they began really pushing against these companies and saying, what are the hazards? Why are people getting sick? Why is water getting poisoned? And there's an enormous amount of research that came out in the 80s about chemical hazards in electronics and what was happening to people's bodies. But what the industry said was, we are clean. Workers are safe, right? So then, I mean, this enormous amount of work that was put into by activists to push the industry is there. But then what the industry did was they moved, right? So new communities, new workers, they took the factories, they took the technology, they took the hazards, but what they did not take was what we had learned, that there were hazards in these factories, that people were getting sick. So here we are in the 90s. Again, Taiwan had an industry long before the 90s, but what the industry said was everything is under control, right? None of the chemicals that you know that are hazardous are really going into workers' bodies. But what we knew was something different, right? So they said workers are safe, and as we know, I don't know if our partner from Taiwan is here, but they started to discover that the water was polluted, the workers were sick, and this, again, this enormous amount, workers basically had to start from zero, right? They started from zero to build again, worker and their advocates and community, and then the factories moved again. And so then we get to Korea in the 2000s, and we realize that, again, factories go, the hazards go, they move there, but all this enormous amount of information, all this, you know, activism that was done in the 80s, in the 90s, and now again, and workers and their advocates have to start from zero. All this incredible amount of information that we know about hazards basically disappeared. So then the companies change their narrative, right? They say, nope, workers are safe. Right, there's only safe exposures in our factories, and we have Dr. Kong here and other activists from Korea who have been fighting to get occupational cancers recognized in Korea. So then what? Where are factories going now? We know that they're going to Vietnam. We know that they're going to Thailand. But what we know is that workers in electronic manufacturing are not safe. And they're not safe because not only are they getting cancer, and the communities have birth defects and reproductive health impacts as well as other things. But what we knew is that as Hesperian, that there was this enormous amount of information and this enormous amount of what had happened, the enormous struggle that people had gone to, the wins and the losses and all that they had done basically didn't transfer through the history, didn't transfer through the moves. And we knew that one thing that we could do was find a way of communicating, of sharing the story, all that we had learned. So what we began to do, as we do with all of our books, was sort of try to really understand all the different people who knew, what they knew, what information they had. And so we began with the people who know the process, right? The chemists and the engineers and, you know, people here who can share more about the company records, people who had mortality files. And then there is a lot of research about the hazards in electronics and about the effects of these chemicals. And so really looking at the science and academia and government. And then talking to unions and other worker or other community organizations, what had worked for them, how they organized, what they did, you know, how they organized workers, informal and formal workers. And then organizers, survivors, families of the people who have died, you know, the people who become sick. And then connecting with former workers, people who saw the process, who knew what was going on. And then really, really at the sort of center of this, really connecting with workers now. So basically we took all of this and all the activism from the people that we know, and we kind of try to plug this into our model. Hesperian's model of developing materials is basically, as popular education goes, starting from people's experience. And for this particular section on electronics is sort of really understanding that there are no or few OSH professionals in many of these countries, and many of whom are there are often paid by the company, so not really on the side of workers. It's really hard to find information, as we have seen, and harder still to sort of understand it from a layperson's point of view. It's particularly hard, so for workers it's even harder. And then finally, really understanding that OSH, although it's hugely important and we're all here, there's a lot of struggles that workers have to fight for, and wages and hours are often the first layer of organizing that workers are doing after working a 14-hour day. So the first sort of piece of our model is accessible language, and we don't say simple language because it's not about the simplicity of it, but it's about whether people can access and activate themselves through it. So, you know, compassionate and grounded in people's experience, using familiar words, and translating. I mean, this it's just really hard to decodify and, as we say, delingualize some of this content. I am a layperson myself, and it's really, really hard to find the right language for workers. And so I wanted to show an example. You know, we all know how hard it is to read an MSDS. So this was an attempt to create something that translates, and it's very simple. This is not, I mean, an end-all be-all. It's sort of how can we create something that can really be understood by many people, not just professionals. The second set is really focusing on relevant and implementable information. And there is so much information out there. So I wanted to just show three examples of what we currently have in our first draft. So the first one is we have all this first aid boxes. So it's sort of taking this approach that people might be exposed to chemicals in the factory, and we want them there to be a system in which they're not exposed, but if they are, what can they do, what they should know. The second example is sort of, obviously I showed you some images, but taking the opportunity to inspire workers to they themselves see some of the hazard recognition. And you know, one of our reviewers said, you know, these people should have PPE, and we said, but most of these people don't have PPE, so we need to have this example. And then the final example that I wanted to show is one of the last pieces of the draft. The current draft is on recycling electronics, and you know, we were sort of trying to imagine. I mean, there was a panel today that talked about upstream and midstream and the end, and sort of understanding that there are a lot of informal workers out there who are recycling our electronics. And while there are lots of people organizing to make sure that that is not the case, that workers do not have to put their lives in the line for us, that we have to find ways of harm reduction approaches. So this is an activity to create an activated charcoal mask. So the final piece is sort of stories, and I mean, I really invite you all, there's lots of activists here who are the people who wrote the stories, who created the stories, but the first example is from Sharps. Dr. Kong is there, and you might want to connect with her, but these are the supporters for health and rights of people in semiconductor industry, and it's about the cases, the cancer cases that they had and how they organized. And they have a great win this year, so I really invite you to talk to Dr. Kong. And this is another case of the Gold Peak batteries in China and workers getting poisoned with cadmium and how they fought for recognition and how they fought for compensation. And it's not always a linear success story. And then the final story that I wanted to share was about, I mean, we all know Foxconn. So so our process is very iterative, and as I mentioned, all those people who are part of this story, all these people who have expertise and experience and knowledge, we really are always looking for people who might contribute to this powerful resource. If you're interested at all, please let me know. But I want to end with this. You know, writing materials that are accessible to workers, it's a huge feat. It's what we do at Hesperian. It's all that we do, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of years of work. But in this battle for sustainable electronics and in this battle to make sure that no other electronic worker has to be poisoned, there are lots of people, there's lots of organizing, and there's lots that needs to be done. So I leave you with my email. Thank you.